The first time I was head chef, I wasn't ready. I was just absorbing all the work and not delegating. I wasn't empowering people. I wasn't a leader per se. I was just doing. So going back and then going forward has been probably the best thing for my self-development.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. The array of incredible produce available, coupled with years and years of migration patterns, has created a culinary landscape in Australia that explores just about every cuisine in the world, but also melds them. We used to get hung up on the notion of fusion, of combining techniques or ingredients from differing cuisines, but it not only happens in Australia successfully, it happens successfully in other countries too. What does the modern cuisine in Australia look like? Scott Lord is the head chef of New Quarter in Melbourne. Scott, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to have you on the show. You're head chef of kind of a leading example of kind of where food's going in Australia in many senses at New Quarter. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
I'd say it's Vietnamese food done through a Melbourne lens per se. It's just understanding like the Vietnamese cuisine and culture and sort of playing with flavors around that. I guess like the techniques that I use are more French inspired, but using like Vietnamese flavors.
French technique or French influence with Vietnamese is not uncommon. If you look at the history of cuisine in Vietnam, there's a link there. And tell us a little about, you know, the links that you found and the techniques that you're using in that sense.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that. Like, obviously, there's the revolution that happened with the French and in Vietnam, but also the even from my perspective of where I've come from, working in French-trained restaurants, etc., and then looking at the menu at New Quarter, it's amazing how much the dishes represent what's happened through my career. So, for example, like the beef tartare and the barmy finger, they take like a pate that's generally done, you know, like brioche at Cumulus, for example, they do pate en croute, and then taking that sort of merging those techniques but using Vietnamese flavors.
I want to explore what you are creating there at New Quarter a bit more. You're originally from New Zealand. Take us back to when you were young. What sort of role did food play in your family?
Yeah, it was obviously I grew up in New Zealand in a small town called Dunedin. I sort of found my passion like coming, you know, I come home from school, make myself some pasta and some 2 minute noodles and just start twisting and playing around with them. And also like my nana's garden. I keep thinking about my nana's garden. She had a smorgasbord of, you know, she lived in a small town, Palmerston, and it was just like a smorgasbord in her garden. You go out there and pick tomatoes and strawberries and I think those things have triggered, you know, like the early introduction for my food career. And then as I moved into high school, it was sort of my cooking teacher that realized that I wasn't really keen on doing much apart from cooking. So, you know, they had gateway courses there that were just a great way to get you into the hospitality sector. So they'd done like 2 week blocks of, you know, training out in the field. You're a 17-year-old, you're keen to learn. And I think that's what sparked, you know, the passion of, you know, hospitality in general for me.
Take us back to the early years when you first sort of stepped foot into the industry. Do you have any stories from that time and what it was like?
Yeah, just flashing back, you know, going back 12 years now, I guess. In New Zealand, food was more, you know, people would go out and have a big steak and, you know, chips and all that stuff. So I started off in a pub. Just cooking steaks and then moved into like a seafood restaurant. And then I started really focusing when I started working at this restaurant called Pier 24. And it was like, it was run by Michael Coughlin. He's now a lamb ambassador for, you know, New Zealand. So he was really well established and really well knowledgeable. And then you had Greg Piner that was also very knowledgeable. So it was great to develop my skills around those two. And yeah. That's basically how I started in Dunedin and then eventually moving on to Melbourne.
Well, tell us about that period of time of moving to Melbourne, was it something that was always on the cards, or how did it unfold?
Yeah, I think it was just working around, you know, like a real positive team environment and, you know, people that want you to do better and develop your skills. So it was sort of like a team and a family, and they were like, you should probably go to Melbourne and, you know, keep pushing and you're young. And I think it really worked for myself and also my wife. She's a nurse. So making that move was quite easy to make. And then once we got to Melbourne, obviously I met Casey McDonald from Cumulus, and he's a Kiwi also. But he had previously done pop-ups with Michael Coughlin back in the day. So there was that common ground with us too when I started working at Cumulus. And yeah, that transition from, you know, quiet old Dunedin doing 50 to 70 covers, you know, on a busy night to doing, you know, Cumulus was doing 300 plus, just absolutely crazy transition.
What was it like for you personally at that period of time of moving to a big city like Melbourne and sort of starting your career?
Yeah, it was an interesting period of my career. Obviously, like, you know, as I say, it was very quiet to being absolutely crazy, and the lifestyle balance, you know, it changed considerably working. And, you know, at Pier 24, I'd sneak out and have a surf on my break and, you know, hang out with the guys, have beers every night. But whereas Melbourne, you finish at like 1 or 2 a.m, you're back asleep, and then you're back up for breakfast shift, and it's more, you're encompassed and but it's cooler. Everyone's on the same page and everyone's pushing and everyone's developing really quickly, whereas it may take you a lot longer in a quieter city.
Cumulus Inc. has made an incredible impact on Melbourne's dining landscape, as has Andrew McConnell and all the restaurants he's done. What were the experiences like for you?
I think it's a great base to learn all bases, almost stripping back what I learned and starting again. They had great like systems and management and courses and support and structure. It was just, yeah, it instilled a lot to me. And obviously they had the correct people in the right spots when I was there. Like Casey McDonald, for example, he's running Craigie Range in Hawke's Bay now, which is just dominating in New Zealand. And then you got John Paul. John Paul was the development chef. So, you know, he was honing everyone in and developing everyone as he was there. So working between those two was just fascinating to watch, and just being a sponge and absorbing all their information.
You mentioned the French technique that's been the backbone of building your career. Tell us a bit about that and the venues that had sort of a huge influence on you as you were learning your craft.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, all the French techniques come back for all the base and the mother sources and just general techniques and terminology, I guess, is all the French and butters and creams and stuff like that. So I think it's like, yeah, you got all those knowledge and all that power of using those mother sources, but then all of a sudden you open up another toolbox per se where you got Vietnamese flavors. So it's just like those two speak to each other, but you just don't know it until you do it.
You've had a foray into other cuisines of Asia with different restaurants. Tell us about those experiences.
Yeah, so after Cumulus, I moved on to Tokyo Tina. I was a sous chef there. I took a role as a sous chef. That's when I got introduced to the commune group. And I worked under a guy named George. He was a Kiwi also. And yeah, I worked there for a couple of years. And then eventually George moved on to Anchovy. He was sous chef at Anchovy. And I took the head chef role of at Tokyo Tina. And I worked there for a couple of years. And that was a fascinating transition for me, like going from Cumulus, you know, commie to CDP to sous chef pretty quickly. So I had a lot of learning to do, just personal development really, and learning how to teach people. It was fascinating.
Tell us a bit about what you were cooking there and that sort of foray into Asian cuisine.
Yeah, so it was probably the first time I had ever delved deep into, you know, Japanese techniques. You know, like ramens we had on there for a moment, like skewers and okonomiyaki and fried chicken, sort of street foodie, but yet restaurant. So the way it is now is sort of like bows and stuff, just what people want, you know, like on Chapel Street, they go there for a beer, they go for their snacks, and it was based around the snacks sort of side of it.
one of the real big influences in the last couple of years is Sunda in Melbourne. Do you have any stories of your time there?
Yeah, so as I say, like after Tokyo Tina, I was on the pass a lot and wanted to go learn. I couldn't teach myself basically. So I searched around Melbourne and I came across Sunda. Obviously was on my radar and I went in there and went for a trial and I was just blown away at Khan's depth of knowledge. To be honest, he's crazy in how much he knows and how he uses flavors and different techniques of, you know, he has like so many native ingredients on there and different powders. And the first time I've ever used like, you know, ultra spurse and spices and gums and ice malts and all that stuff that he uses in ice creams. And it's just so consistent. And the first time I've ever seen a recipe that has a recipe that has a recipe, if you know what I mean, like there's so multi-layered. Like the otter on that menu, for example, already has four recipes before you even start setting it. And there's not even plating it or weighing up what goes on top of it. So I think I learned a lot in that aspect of that the depth of flavor starts from the first source.
Well, what did you take from that time there in Khan? What's he actually like to work with?
He's very talented. So he's got an eye for everything and can just spot things from a mile away. I think he really honed me in that aspect of just being more aware just honing in on recipes really and the depth of flavor balancing. It's just, yeah, he's crazy.
New Quarter was previously called Hanoi Hana and owned by the same commune group. How did that gig come about for you?
Yeah, so at that time I was at Sunda and I think I was just ready for a change. Then I reached out to Anthony. I was just like, hey, you know, let's just go for a coffee. And then he said he's got a head chef role coming up at New Quarter. So I was like, oh, let's go back and go work for the commune group. I know they're a lovely company to work with. They are very supportive and really open to ideas and changes. So, you know, that's how New Quarter was taken from Hanoi Hana New Quarter to just New Quarter. We stripped it back. And I think that stripping back comes with the food as well. That's basically how that process went.
Your first head chef gig was at Tokyo Tina. And you left to learn a bit more about your craft. What's it like now back in a head chef role? Is it different compared to the first experiences you had?
Yeah, 100%. I think the first time I was head chef, I wasn't ready. I was just absorbing all the work and not delegating. I wasn't empowering people. I wasn't a leader per se. I was just doing. So I think now I've got to the point where I actually delegate a lot. I empower people. I have training things in place where I have a good structure of the kitchen and sort of have a bit more awareness of what's going on. So I think going back and then going forward has been probably the best thing for my self-development.
You mentioned that the food and offering is kind of stripped back a little bit. What's it been like in the last sort of 2 years and your thoughts about offerings in restaurants? Has the upheaval of the last 2 years affected your approach and what you want to get out of the industry?
I think it's changing. I mean, obviously the food's going up, prices are going up, and I think the chefs around us all know that. The cost is a small part, but obviously the offering, you know, there's more vegetarians, there's more vegans, there's more fructose. The way we cook is almost you have to be a rubber band and basically flex to whatever which way we need to cook. And I think when I'm being clever with the dishes, like I'm thinking about those dietaries, I'm thinking about those allergies, I'm thinking about how those people are eating it. I think it's a really funny time. So I think over lockdown was a good chance for everyone in hospitality just to have a break and reflect on what they're doing and how they're executing what they're doing.
Let's have a look at what you're doing there at New Quarter. Do you have a dish or two you can share with us that sort of exemplifies the approach that you have?
Yeah, I think, for example, the Bar Me Finger is a classic one. I'll probably go beef. Yeah, Bar Me would be the one. It's like basically a Bar Me that I've pressed it overnight, and then I cut it, and then basically make a little finger shape, and then it's done with a pate that's really light, and it's got Vietnamese flavors infused into the reduction. So there's like Vietnamese five spice, Meiji seasoning. I'm not going to give you all the recipe, but you know, it's piped into the finger, and then it's got pickled cucumbers to resemble the pickled carrot that you usually get, and basically the chicken skin that just gives a bit of texture, and some garlic oil. So I guess that's a good dish that shows you like it's Vietnamese and it's a classic, but made into something clever and a snack and yeah, something great style if you're starting a meal.
Your role has you connecting with producers of the region as well. Do you have any stories of the producers that you've made connections with that feature on the menu?
Yeah, I'm starting to work with Two Hands a bit more. I think they're a great company. They're sustainable and they're driving from the front, and they text you and basically send out what's available and what the fish has got going on. And the Pacific oysters, they just have a stand order they drop off to us. So they're all, signature oysters, great suppliers. And yeah, I love using them, to be honest.
What's important as you delve into sort of Vietnamese cuisine with that sort of French backbone, when you're putting dishes together, what are the important elements for you to let it shine?
I think it needs freshness, number one. I mean, Vietnamese food is very fresh, high acid, but also a lot of umami and a lot of structure to it. So it's punchy, but it's also easy to eat.
Where do you see modern dining in Australia going? It's so many influences from many countries all over the globe, thanks to migration. But, you know, as a head chef of a leading restaurant, where do you see things going?
That's up to what happens, I guess, with supply. I mean, I think as multicultural, like you got in my kitchen, for example, I have Nepalese, Koreans, Kiwis, Australians, and they all bring their own twists. So it's hard to predict where it's going, but I think the focus more or less will go more down the veggie path, using a lot less meat products. And that's what I envision probably was going to happen. And people are going to change. Like, people have to change, I guess, the way we're eating.
You've started to build this amazing career in Melbourne. What do you love about what you do?
The people. I think the people every morning, like, obviously, I live in Melbourne. My family's in New Zealand. So my team around me is my family. So I think just having that family and team and developing people around, that's what gets me going.
Well, Scott, congratulations on what you're doing there down in Melbourne. Loved having you on Deep in the Weeds today to hear your story. Please keep in touch and we'll catch up again soon.
Cool. Thanks, Scott. Thank you.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we take a deep dive into the lives of the incredible people who ply their trade in the food and hospitality sector. Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen. Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay safe and be well.